everyone. Thanks very much for wanting to know, just sorting out the projector. Welcome to this session this afternoon at 5 o'clock. I'd like to introduce David Merry and Janet Gunter, and they're going to talk about their project to Open Tech this afternoon, Project Restart. Thank you.
Hi, I'm going to start. My name is Janet. I don't have so much of a technical background. I kind of started out as a human rights activist and a blogger, and I ended up working in what they call international development, which is frustrating for many reasons. But I ended up hanging out a lot with the geek types and really dabbling more in technology in that space, partly because the most interesting and motivated people were doing that, we're working with technology. People who really think outside of bureaucratic boxes usually often hitting their heads on those boxes. But so I met an Italian guy also here in London through one of our meetups for the ICT4D community, so basically geeks working international development. And we chatted over months and months about actually what was bothering us more than anything about being exposed to huge injustice, poverty, oppression in the places that we worked in the South, was actually coming back up here to our European and like North American homes and seeing the waste around us, just seeing like, you know, the whole upgrade culture, everyone freaking out about the new whatever iPhones or Samsung whatever, and the tech bloggers, everything about like the way that we consume technology. And we're fans of technology, we love everything you can do with that, with it. But we started to get really irritated about this, and basically, we decided to do something, maybe rather naively. Last June, we just threw our first what we called restart party. So we got a couple of geek friends together at a pub, actually. And we asked people to bring broken stuff, stuff that was frustrating them, broken e-stuff. So stuff, anything that had a battery or that plugged in. And our idea was, we'll open it with you, and we'll, you know, learn from the process. Probably you can fix a lot of stuff. So, for example, this clock that this guy really, really liked that was broken for the smallest little connection inside of it was fixed within, I don't know, 15 minutes. You know, just a small soldering job. And so basically what we realized is there's like a lot of people who are, wait, you probably know them because they probably come to you with all their broken stuff, right? There are a lot of people who just feel really disempowered and like they can't control the stuff that they own anymore. And everything is becoming more and more of a closed black box. And there's a real issue around just like sharing skills, potentially reskilling and like and encouraging young people especially to open stuff and to kind of reinvest in repair. So we just started holding, like it just kind of snowballed. We held more events in different kind of places like galleries. Here's one in a gallery. Oh, this is my computer. So this is actually one of the inspirations for our meetup. My old computer, as you can see, I need enough. This one has become the guest computer at my house, the one that you're seeing here. We open it up, and this is like, for example, what 5 or 6 years worth of dust looks like inside a MacBook. And how many people actually open up a MacBook? We know it's running hot, it's screaming, and it's running slow, and you're having problems with the people. Just the first thing they do is they think, okay, it's dead. You know, a lot of times when it gets like this, they'll just automatically shut off because they're too hot. So people don't know what to make of that. They just think it's too old. They'll get rid of it. Wendy's can have a second life, or they can continue to be used. A lot of people are putting, like, I'm not a geek, but I don't really know how fast they can get, but like solid state drives inside these old MacBooks, getting new life out of them. So we started moving to libraries, other spaces. And just to say that the people that were coming to our events, and this might be interesting to you, and some of the repairers, like being able to hear from, they're not the people who are sitting, like, cruising Facebook and Twitter and, like, hanging out all their lives online. These are actually people that, they're kind of like the people that go to community events. So we were linking into Transition Town Networks. FreeCycle also advertised our events, and that was huge for us. A lot of people came, because FreeCyclers actually go places. They do stuff. So that was a big lesson, that actually people on email lists and community activists are really interested, and they'll be kind of your first adopters or early adopters of this kind of thing, which I think is a lesson to learn for us tech heads and social media people. You know, the smallest little thing is a learning opportunity. So, like, looking at all the dead kettles, you know, and like learning how to use a multimeter and learning about, you know, current. And David can tell you more about this, like the learning aspects of our events. The events usually last 3 or 4 hours, and some people bring us stuff that's actually really difficult to do in 3 or 4 hours. So our idea is not to replace commercial repair at all. In fact, what we'd like to do is kind of make repair seem a little bit less scary for people, and often we'll be referring people to commercial repairers. So look, we can't finish this job, but this is more or less what the job is, and we can find you someone who comes pretty recommended to do it. Often when you tear something down, you can learn from that process. So we've done about 25 events, and these kind of free community events, and they've been really successful to build up kind of a following for that, and people are asking us to, you know, to replicate them, to do this in other communities. But one of the really important things is recruiting people who can teach repair and help guide people through these repairs. So I'm going to pass it over to David to talk about that, but just to say really quickly that we're not just going to be satisfied with this. Like, this is really nice and it's empowering, and there's a feeling of like energy there that's really powerful, that's really real and tangible. But we'd like to eventually, we'd like to be, how can I say, like legions of people that can push back at manufacturers, but can also reward manufacturers for and give them positive feedback for things that are repairable, that work well, that are designed well. And we'd like to be in other spaces, so maybe in educational institutions. We'd also potentially even like to do these kind of parties within corporations. So kind of go in and get people thinking about these issues by having fun, like thinking about design and positive steps forward. David can tell you more.
These steps are, these are the restart parties, which are kind of the first activities of the restart project. So what I want to try to achieve is to try to convince you all to become restarters, to join the restart parties, and then we can create many more if you all join in. So Janet mentioned that startups are editing some geeks, but it's not, the restart parties are not just by geeks for geeks. There's a diversity of both restarters and attendees that come to the parties. And as you can see as well on the pictures, fixers. The fixers are quite different as well from each party to each party. So, why did I join? In the first place, I'm not an engineer, and my passion is really to explain how things work. So, it's in the distant past, I used to explain how technology works. I wrote articles on explaining how Z-modem and modem works and PCMCIE works, if you're old enough to remember this kind of thing. I guess Dave probably knows on that. Yeah. And more recently, I've been explaining how to do freedom of information requests, the best access request, how to reclaim your DNA of the police DNA database. All this kind of other thing. It's the same. It's still explaining how things work, whether it's technological, whether it's more human rights issues. So, but I'm also a campaigner. So, I want some. I don't want just to write in or do guides. I want some actionable outcomes. So, for me, my interest in the restart parties is kind of the transformational process through attendees, go through how they interact with each other, with the restarters, with the devices. So, if you want to join, I guess you need to figure out why is it you want to join restart parties. So, whether it's because you enjoy fixing things, which probably most of us do, whether it's you care for the earth and so want to avoid adding stuff being recycled or just thrown out. Whether it's helping each other or the out or all the above or other things. I mean, that's everyone's got their own motivation. My motivation really to volunteer the Restart parties is to see the to empower those that are coming, that are attending the parties, to learn about repair, and then in the future that they repair their own things on their own. So once you kind of find out why you want to join the parties, the practicalities of it is fairly easy. The competence level, it doesn't need to be very high. There are four things that are really needed for four skills for most repairers. So one is common sense. Janet, I mean, showed quite a few slides that show the multimeter. I mean, for most people that have changed the fuse, I mean, you got some ideas of continuity, and that means that one of the first checks to do with those device is to check if all the connections are working and if there's continuity. Then, I mean, the other obvious thing is, which has also been shown on some of the pictures, which has been a common problem, is, I mean, if anyone has touched a lit light bulb, they know electricity produces heat. And most laptops, they get hot if the, and usually the heat is conveyed out by fans. And so when the fans are blocked with crumbs, dust, and other horrible things, that's when we wonder whether the laptop is alive or not. That means that doing a good cleanup of the laptops, any device that got a fan, is usually, something that's, that extends the life of the device. The other aspect, other skill that is needed is some experience. But that's kind of be acquired at the parties. And basic experience, usually, the basic things that people need to figure out, and one of the reasons they kind of concern to do it on their own and why usually they come to the parties as well, is how do you open the damn things? I mean, you've got screws and some stuff, but often you've got you don't have any visible aspect, and so you need to kind of pry it open. So how much force do you need to do when you pry it open? That's the kind of thing you effectively learn by experience. And also when you open something up, often there are of course hidden connectors, and you need to effectively learn not to rip them off. The third skill is good research skills. That's meaning finding out guides online, and I mean, for these laptops, I mean, iFixit is a pretty good resource. Otherwise, there are YouTube videos, there are lots of resources online. And of course, we have developed always several restarters at each parties, and we all have our own competence. And so just talking with each other as well is helping out in that respect. The last skill is to access some tools. So the most obvious is a set of screwdrivers, but that's the most obvious thing. So when I mentioned that you need to pry open quite a few devices, usually you need some plastic tools to spudgers to do it. But that can easily be made up. So either you get some guitar plectrons, or cut some old credit cards, either will do fine. There are also, of course, usually lots of screws, and the problem is to figure a way that you can put them back in the right order at the end. and there are some simple solutions to that. I mean, one is to use an egg carton box and just number the slot and put screws in the order when you take them out, and then it's easy to put them back in the inverse order, or to write down on a piece of paper the diagram of the device and put blue tack where the screws are and attach them there. I mean, there are a lot of different tips like that that makes it easy. So it's not very difficult. So I hope that's going to give you an idea of what it entails to become a restarter. So one thing that came out in the party is that there is going through the repair of the different devices, but most importantly is discussing with the people that bring the device. So what is wrong? How do we process to identify what's wrong? How do we fix it? And for them to learn the basic skills, so in the future they feel confident enough to fix their own device and devices of other people, and possibly join as restarter as well. And so I mentioned diversity at the beginning. There is some diversity in the restarter. I mean, with a lot of us, in fact, come from different countries. I mean, part English, part American, originally from France. The other co-founder comes from Italy. There are lots of different origins. But we still, I mean, mostly men. And so I think it's welcome as well as women and people from minority communities. There could be more diversity in the restarters. In the people that come to the party, it's probably a bit more diverse, but I mean that depends on where the events are as well. So I hope that gives you a good feel of the parties. I don't know if we ask any questions now or if we
yeah.
So if you have any questions about it.
Has there been any looking at sort of community e-waste bins? My context of this is my local library is basically an enormous great box at the front. Where you go, hey, here's my broken electronic device, and so it's Have you gone and spoken to your says, hey, can I just rummage through this thing and see if I can fix any of these?
No, this is a major problem because we were following the policy level discussions about future economies, circular economies, and what we notice is that they're already captured by these corporations that shred everything, that want to get the gold and the actual prime materials out of these devices. I mean, they're full of all kinds of actually quite valuable metals. And for example, you go to your local council, even to the WE facilities, all of that gets pretty. Some of it may get diverted, but I really don't know if it's functioning. But the one we saw in Camden, people were being encouraged to smash things before they put them in the pink skip. So this is a real issue, and we were, well, there's a whole story behind this, but just to say that gaining access to those facilities and actually diverting things from them is not easy. And we wish that these big corporations would see that in the long term we could work with them and that we will guarantee that things end up in pink skips when they're dead, fully dead. But they don't see things the same way, really. Anyone else?
Just on this point, we had a recent party at the Brixton Market where people could bring stuff to exchange, to swap. And there was a big bin where people put their electronics that wasn't working. And I think most of it was not working. I mean, there are some scanners that just were old and did not have drivers for them. The drivers were fine, but they don't have any kind of driver for Windows. There was the lamps that we fixed as well. There's quite a few fuses that were blown and that kind of thing needs to be changed. But most of the stuff that was put in the stuff as to get rid of, not to swap, we got fixed. And it was bad weather.
But also to say that event was sponsored by Veolia. And so there was, we were actually a little bit nervous about taking everything out of the waste stream. But so there's a real feeling that that's not been resolved, even though there are directives coming from Europe about waste prevention. That hasn't been sorted out yet.
How do you find? I don't know much about this, but I would imagine that there would be liability issues or risk issues where you fix someone's thing, but it's not grounded; it's double wall insulators, and then there's a major iron. Something really bad happens. How does that work? Is there just some setup where you say, well, by the way, effectively, and everyone just trusts everyone? Or
we're looking into it more deeply. But just to say that because what we're doing is free, and we also have kind of a disclaimer on every table and ask people to that it says you take responsibility both for your data and for your device. So it's not just the electrical issue. It's like people come to us without having done proper backups, and so there's all kinds of issues around that, but we ask people to take responsibility, and it's a community. We call it assisted self-repair, and we're encouraging people that want to try this elsewhere to do this under the auspices of another organization that already has liability insurance, and we have some. So, but it's an issue that we need to probably look into and just for like worst case scenario. But it's funny because we had people, some kind of skeptical kind of fab labbers and hack space people saying that that they didn't like the idea for that reason, but we this, we're not the only ones in the world doing this. Like, there's the repair cafe movement, there's people doing this all over the world, and there's not one case that I've heard of a problem yet. Like, you know, like that nightmare scenario on Airbnb, the one with the flat in San Francisco, where that hasn't happened yet, and they're in the repair cafe space. No, it's a really, but it's an important question for us to imagine the worst case.
I'm reading Hackspace, and this sounds really terrific, but the problem I see is connecting with that population of people. We circulate in our little techie circles, and we don't circulate outside of that, and you really want to reach out and bring in. So how can we connect this together?
I mean, the parties happen in people's communities. I mean, we worked in libraries, in markets, and in community centers. So it's we go out to where people are. I mean, where some people are, to connect. I think for the restart, we're here at event like OpenTech. We've got a blog, a Twitter account, Facebook. I think as well. I'll talk to the Facebook, but it's happy to connect and some restarters are also part of the Hackspace. So I think there is some communication there as well. But happy to further any discussion.
Yeah, just to say that we love makers and hackers and all kinds of people, but we do feel that sometimes there are slightly privileged spaces, or they feel somehow separate from the rest. So our idea from the beginning has been very almost like kamikaze, and going out into places where people are and working with any group that shows interest or that has a shared interest. And we've done trainings like in libraries where we ended up having mostly kind of women whose children are already out of the house, who had actually it was hand-me-up laptops that they had inherited from their children that they weren't willing to give up on yet, and their children were like, get another one, throw it away. If you go out into the community, you'll end up working with quite different groups, although the needs are sometimes really great, and that's something that we can't really control for.
And I guess just for the point on that, I mean, I focused on kind of more hardware repairs, but in that event, and it's lots of demand. There is quite a lot as well of just software improvement, and then making the machine go faster by removing lots of cruds that just get launched at startup, whatever the machine is.
Have you actually started talking to kids as a thing? Because it's a generational problem at the moment, so fixing one that's coming in, and also they'll talk to parents.
Well, just really quickly, we did one event at an academy with younger kids. I think they were like 12 or 13, and that was amazing. Just the energy of kids to tear down stuff, and they're fearless, in a way that adults read the little warning on the back, and they're like, oh my god, I can't possibly open this thing. So that's been really good, just that we don't have a background in education and working with kids, so we're looking for opportunities where we can pair up with people that are already doing that. We are, but we're currently speaking at universities and working at universities. But maybe it's a bit too late by then. Maybe kids are already just too inculcated in the throwaway culture. Kids at university realize that they're not necessarily going to get a job straight out of university, and they need to be more resilient. So it's been interesting being at universities too. But I think that's really moving forward. One last question?
Yeah, a place around the corner from where I live, they fixed bicycles and sent them to Africa. Oh. Have you guys heard of similar initiatives? Do you work with them?
There's one called Computer Aid, and one of our trustees is the founder of Computer Aid. So it's in our space, but we think the problem is actually here, and it doesn't necessarily concern... it does concern them when we send them our e-waste, but that's actually illegal at this point. But there's a couple of initiatives like that, and even refurbishing computers for people who need them here. There's some good initiatives. But what we want to concentrate on is that the owner of the device, empowering people and changing their behavior in a way that they actually own. There are other people working on donations, and we really want that moment when people, you saw that woman when she got her tablet working, that moment is like, that's what we're focused on, to change people's behavior. Thank you.
Thank you.
today. That was a fascinating talk. Great. I've got a quick question to Janet and David. What's the most common item that's brought in to you?
It's definitely laptops, and like David said, it's not all just hardware. It's a lot of it's just like software stuff. Like, it seems really small to probably those people in the room, but people just let their laptops kind of rot, and if they don't have someone nearby to help them, they just end up giving up. So wouldn't you say it's laptops?
Laptop and for some reason, Kitos as well.
Oh, yeah,
okay. Kitos, yes. Yeah. And usually it's just the contacts at the bottom which is a bit twisted. There are also some, there's quite a few repairs which are just, changing a fuse. So, it's just education on the and on the safety aspect, as mentioned. So checking that the contacts are well connected, when you change the fuse as well.
And just really quickly say that those little small domestic electricals there's really no commercial case to repair them or to resell them. So it's really important that we try and keep stuff going as long as possible. There's just absolutely no way you can resell that stuff or really repair it commercially viably. So that it's important to save your kettle if you can.
Absolutely. And can you just repeat how people can get in touch with you, like via Twitter, website, etc.?
Our tweet got cut off there. Sorry, it's just at Restart Project on Twitter, and on the web it's therestartproject.org. And we have a form there that you can fill out if you want to get involved, or you can just find us on Twitter and Facebook. So, thank you.
I'll talk to you
later if
you
don't
want to.
Cool. Thanks so much. Now we know. I'm not sure how much setting up those got to be.
It's cool. You start, Rain, and when it sounds like you've finished introducing me, I'll go.
Okay, wow.
How long do you think that is? We could have done it in this time, really.
Okay.
It's fine.
All right, then. So I'd like to introduce now Dave Green. Dave Green's been part of my geek life in London since I moved to London. So from NTK to NotCon to Dorkwatt to Fitbit Polytechnic, who I'm a great fan of. And today he's going to talk about cheap synth. And I can't wait.
Thanks. So. That's good. And we're live. Thank you, Ivan.
Hey.
Then you have
Thank
the mic. Thanks. And this begins.
I assume this is all going to work according to plan, but I was like, if not, we've got the right people to fix it right here. Hello everyone. Thank you all for coming. Thank you all for sticking it through to the end of this day. Have you all had a fun day here at Open Tech?
Yes.
Yes, that's good. That's the kind of response I'm looking for. Rain, I have very little to add to Rain's excellent introduction. Some of you may know me from Need to Know. Who read Need to Know when they were perhaps a child? That's good. That's a funny. There's no children here. I can read out this excellent bit from. This is MTK 15 years ago. This was a news story. I remember Coco the Gorilla doing the AOL cyber chat through sign language. The hilarious gag I have here is Coco the Gorilla. Blah, blah, blah. And then the quote is, I had cyber sex with a what? Asks Coco. Oh, yeah. So, and you may also recognise me, of course, the recent stint I had presenting MasterChef. It's this bastard. It's this. Look at, just that half of that face. Don't care. I look into it, and it's like, that's John Turan. It's not me. So, moving on. And as Ryan said, this is my band. Here I am playing. That's a Wii guitar controller, Guitar Hero controller, and this is Dave Blake, who's the real musician in the band. Here he's playing a real keyboard. That issue will be addressed in upcoming. Of course, we didn't start out playing what appears to be a proper stage in front of a drum kit we're not using and a Marshall amp that we're not feeding through. It's called Fakebit Polytechnic because it's supposed to be kind of chiptune-y. But it's called fake bits rather than 8-bit, so we can get away with it if it's not actual 8-bit. We didn't start out like that, we started out like this. Who here was born in 1988? That's good, I feel better.
During.
during that genetic, yeah. Good. So what you'll see here, again, this is my colleague Dave Pape, he's playing a Casio NT100, which is all, I don't know, I think it cost a lot of money in the 80s. Tragically, you can't make out the details. It's very proud of its graphic equalizer up in this corner, which, I look back and I think I could have invented Acid House if I just worked out how to get those frequencies resonating. You also can't see here, I'm probably talking too loud, it has the tones that you can pre-select on the Casio include, I think, organ, pipe organ. That's, you know, it's nice to have that. That flexibility, and right down at the end, just when you're really going wild in a gig, funny and cosmic tone. And believe me, there was nothing particularly funny about either of those. This got me thinking: if I was a teenager now, what are my options? If I want to play a keyboard, if I want to be in some sort of confrontational synth-pop band. And I went to the first place, I always start for these things, which is Deptford Junk Market. Anyone from South East?
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. Any Deptford Junk Market veterans?
Not yet.
I'll see you down there. This was Wednesday. That's, again, you can't see it, that's a Yamaha Porter Sound. And look, it's got tons of sliders up there. Probably sounds awful, but you know, you could probably get one of those for like £20 or something. This is the Yamaha Porter Tone. I'm unfamiliar with that distinction. Is there any Yamaha fans in? No. Okay, moving on. This actually, you know, I was quite torn by this next one. And if you can make that out, that's a Casio keyboard that's been built into a Ghetto Blaster. So it looks like you've got a keyboard down the bottom here, but they had a cassette player in there, and then there's a radio on that end. So presumably, you could record yourself playing the Casio, and you know, it's got all the usual sort of terrible Casio rhythms and tones and that kind of thing, but then you could record it onto the cassette, or if a song came on the radio, you thought, oh, I'm going to jam with this, you could play it off. I'm going to use that, I hope I don't see this. I was acting all casual like, as you do, you know, not letting on that you are a speculator. And I said, oh wow, what's this? How much do you want for this? And without a moment's delay, I went, £50. £50? £50? I'm like, well, and how much would it be if it hadn't been rained on? you'll learn this. Deptford Market is an all weather market. This is, sorry, VCS, that was tempting. I didn't even ask the price. Probably entirely resistant to that amount of moisture, the classic Atari video computer system. Deptford Market is an all-weather market. That's a printer that they were selling that had been snowed on. That's a bit of a challenge for you guys at some point. And part of the selection, this is like little Dell desktop. Little mini
shoes.
As you can see, this is the PCs and power tools store of Deptford Market. It's like being in a William Gibson novel down there. So, whither the young people of today, I think, is that, if that's the right expression. Where do they go? I was excited by this development. This is a man. You can't read this now because the projector's a bit low. This is that. Who's seen me demonstrating this Rock Band keyboard downstairs? The rest of you are about to have your minds blown. So this was the Rock Band wireless keyboard. I've got one here actually that I put my own URL on the back of. What the way I have been explaining it to people? That sounded bad. Catch this guy. Where did it fall out of? It's just coming out of the sky. Oh, no, it's fine. Has anyone played the Rock Band or Guitar Hero game? Few of you. Everyone familiar with the concept of standing in front of a console, hammering plastic instruments and thinking you're a musician? Anyway, so I approve, particularly, so this guy, he's a real digital musician. This is a respected blog, apparently. And he's gone, I'm not going to read the whole thing out, he has gone crazy about this product. When it came out, he's saying, oh wow, what if a gaping hole was filled by a game company instead of a music and like pick up a Rock Band, and he presumably knows what he's talking about, blah blah blah. So he says it's got intelligent MIDI mapping in a strap-on form factor, which is a phrase that I would agree with. With battery power for $80. This guy thinks, when it came out, this guy was going, oh, I'm all over this. This is the biggest bargain I have found for $80 when it came out. Almost exactly the point that the Rock Band franchise brought out keyboards and drums was Rock Band 3, was the point that people stopped buying Rock Band games. And so consequently, eBay was flooded with them. I was very excited by this. Anyone use one of these? No, okay, now we're through the looking glass. So the best thing about the Rock Band guitar is that, inexplicably, as well as controlling console games, it has a MIDI output, and if I meet the guy who randomly put this MIDI output on it, I will be, oh well, I'll ask him why he did that. And because it means you can connect it to any MIDI instrument, and again, my friend Dave Pate had one of these. This is a DSP-based synthesizer module. It's got MIDI at the top, and I had one of these keyboards, and I gave it to him, and I said, I don't know, Dave, maybe we could read it over Bluetooth or something. That's what I do with all the other instruments. I'm very unimaginative. He had one of these that he gaffer taped to the bottom of one of these guitars, and that he was reading over MIDI, and somehow some elaborate power supply. It's quite a heavy object. I'm sorry I didn't bring one along for today. But anyway, he was very pleased with it. It had all these knobs, and he could make sounds, and he could do sort of elaborate patches to download to it. I thought, well, what if I don't have one of those? And if you look around, you can find, again, sort of cheap MIDI modules that Yamaha made ages ago. The other thing that intrigued me, this is from the original FAQ from the Rock Band 3 keyboard manual. It says here that, like, clearly this was a question they got a lot. If the keyboard is considered a real instrument, why doesn't it make any sound? And you imagine their call center going, no, all right, it is a real instrument, but it's MIDI. You can't. The humans can't hear MIDI. It's yet. So they have an extensive explanation of, oh no, you have to connect it to a MIDI instrument. And I was going, what if you didn't? What? And then I just started casting around for what would be a kind of easy off-the-shelf MIDI module that I could plug into it. Anyone seen these? I really want one of these. This again, because I was interested in chip tunes. They describe this as revolutionary FPGA. Anyone know what FPGA stands for? Yeah, go all together.
Field Programmable Gate Array.
We're in the right place. I didn't realise. I only recently looked this up. Field programmable means you can program it
in a field.
I thought it meant that, you know, there were kind of database fields that you could fill in. And it was, oh, I don't know. Anyway, this looks really good, and it emulates the C64 MID, obviously the gold standard in chip-tune sound chips, and the YM2149, which I'm less familiar with. Isn't it a spectral or something? Anyway. I was excited by this. I thought, oh, that sounds good. I think it's actually an add-on that goes on to another Arduino project or something. As you can see here, 91 backers on Kickstarter pledged $12,000. In my head, that means they're paying an average of... it's more than $100. So I thought, oh, that's a bit steep. I could have got one of those second-hand Nords. Still searching for SID emulators. I found this is an Arduino project. Of course, the trap for the Armoury is it's a SID shield, which means who uses Arduinos? Well, for everyone else, a shield is another PCB that you laboriously connect to an Arduino and have to solder yourself. And I was going, I don't have loads of free time. But thinking about the Arduino, I was looking into it more. I found, there is an Arduino for anyone who doesn't know what it looks like. Wasn't expecting to come up there. Here we go, the Mozzie Sound Synthesis Library, which this guy, I think, just started doing at the start of the year. So if I had tried to do this at any other point, I would have probably given up. This is really good. He's kind of underselling it here. Plus, he's done loads of hard work for me, so I'm not going to take the mickey out of these descriptions. But he's like, here, he's got many of the classic techno sounds you'll recognise, using a line to sweep frequency, phase and amplitude modulation, sense. And of course, the classic, global wash of detuned oscillator pairs. And the number of times I've seen that in a club night review, I thought, oh yeah, detuned oscillator pairs. However, in practice, it does sound like, anyway, I had a go of it. The only other challenge, I mean, these are what the pins look like. You probably all know these. People here probably have this tattooed on their inside, or on the inside of their eyelids. Where else do you need it? The only real hassle, I thought, and you can get an Arduino Nano for about 10 quid. The only hurdle that I then fell into is if you look up what the proper MIDI specification is by these people, the MIDI Manufacturers Association, a.k.a. the MAN, what they want you to do, there's all this sort of stuff. Who knows what an octo oscillator is? Yeah. without boring everyone else, so an octo oscillator is a way of isolating. This is your MIDI in. This is the chip that's processing it. And the octo oscillator is supposed to isolate the currents and prevent ground hum. And it does it via, it's got a light sensitive resistor and an LED inside a little package. That, according to most of the Arduino forums that I've read, people can't get to work. And there's endless speculation. People go, oh, are you sure this is 220? I've got this diode the wrong way around. And then it works, but then it doesn't work better. If you scroll further down the MIDI Manufacturers Association page, and this isn't conclusive, so again, you know, don't do anything mission critical based on this. They seem to concede the MIDI in connector is supposed to have the octo isolator and no ground connection. And then they go on talking about, like, anyone remember those PC joystick MIDI cables that you plugged in, you know, an old, yeah. And then they concede that they went out and they found 6 different PC cables. And it's certainly implied that those don't have octo isolators, because where would they go? They're just bits of wire. So, in fact, in practice, you can just connect what we got here. So you can connect MIDI in to RX. If you're running the Mozzie library, you can get audio out from pin 9. Probably put it through a resistor so you don't blow, overload the current. But that's optional. And then you just need to connect up the power to whatever you've got. So I think that's. Oh yeah. So I'm going to do a quick demo now. Are we doing all right for time?
Yes.
See if this battery, the one's in here. Yeah. Oh, like, has anyone been in the bar earlier?
Yes.
And wondered what the fuck was that?
No, I can hear your fucking 20 kHz noise.
What I haven't done successfully here is not.
What I haven't done successfully is notched out the there's a kind of 16 kHz. Carrier wave that comes in.
Yeah. Oh, I could take the tone down.
Yes.
How about that?
Still there, isn't
it?
I've still got it.
Yeah. Anyone hear anything really high?
Yes.
Well, wait a minute. So, and again, what I was trying to do was get. I thought I'll probably produce something that sounds like an arcade game or a ZX Spectrum or maybe a SID chip. What actually turned out. I'll go down a bit. So you've got that, and it seems to produce all kinds of slightly bigger tones. So I'd had this debate thinking, if I was trying to encourage teenagers to build something like this, surely they'd like quite a dramatic, big sound, like. Oh, that's better. That's kind of resonating. I've also got, I'll shout into this. So, those of you who haven't seen this demonstrated downstairs, things. That's frequency modulation. I don't understand the maths, but apparently that's what it is. So it just makes the sound bigger, and that's being applied through a low frequency oscillator. You can hear it a little bit there. It's kind of like woo, 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 like on there. And then as a bonus, you also get these additional kind of harmonics. Maybe that's 3.5 times the carrier tone. This is like being at a gig. Everyone's got their mobiles out. So, to be honest,
I spend a lot of time just playing around with these sounds, going, oh, that's... And so people, as I've been demonstrating it, say, does it, like, is it as good if you don't pull that facial expression? The thing? And I go, well, it is, it works, but... it just adds to the theatre of the moment. So anyway, you can come and play at that. It can produce theoretically pleasant tones as well. Maybe if there's time, we'll come back and I'll show you what happens if you overstep the limits of the frequencies that you're supposed to sample at. So my conclusion.
I think these were my closing slides. I had a hilarious thing here. Well, I had a Raspberry Pi kind of news story that talks about, how will Britain's kids compete in the world of technology? And I've replaced technology with techno all the way through. And it was all about how Britain had once been a leader in the world of techno. Now they have Getter and like Deadmau5 and Skrillex were contaminating the international market with their mass-produced techno. But I don't run out of ideas on that. What about the techno legacy of Underworld at the Olympics? Hasn't materialised. So this is from the punk fanzine Sniffing Glue. This is quite a famous quote. I think it's taking off the country music thing called Three Chords and the Truth. Essentially, they're saying this is a chord, this is another chord, here's a third chord. Now form a band, for anyone who can't see that down at the bottom. Yeah, that's the punchline. I've got to ask, what band are they? What tunes is this band playing? Any musicians in? What are they playing? There's no, why not a fourth or like a relative minor? I've gone over time. My thing is, you know, this is, so you can now get these keyboards on eBay for 20 quid. Well, I've got a couple. Come and approach me. Join the developer program, as I call it. If you can play the keyboard or program in C, that's all you need. Yeah. So that's a £20 guitar. That's a £10 nano that I got off eBay, and that's the Mozzie Sound Synthesis Library, a cordial wash of DG and oscillator pairs. Now build a cheapsynth.com. Thank you. Yay.